is the podcast to the show. You can listen to or know.
Welcome to our Ted Lasso talk, the Tedcast. Welcome, all Greyhound fans. Welcome, all you sinners from the dog track, and all the AFC Richmond fans around the world. It's the Lasso way around these parts with Coach Coach and Boss. Without further ado, Coach Castleton.
Okay, welcome back, beautiful people. Thanks for joining us as we discuss Ted Lasso season two. It's season two, right? Yeah, season two. This is episode 12. And this is part four of our continuing discussion. This is something, it's Inverting the Pyramid of Success, which is episode 12 of Ted Lasso, the finale of season two. This is our fourth part. I am your host, Coach Castleton. With me, as always, is Coach Bishop.
Here to represent the pro panda lobby.
Oh, I love it. I love it. That's something that stuck with us. That comment by Boss, that's lasted. That was that she didn't, wait, was it you or was it Boss?
Oh, the Boss, fact, right? That it shouldn't have been changed. Like,
yeah.
No, I started it, but we vibed on it.
Oh, that was you? Yeah, that was you that was like, I don't like this line?
Yeah, yeah.
Isn't that funny? God, what? It's not like me to give Boss extra credit. That's
What's going on over there?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm softening up. I'm of course speaking of our boss, Emily Chambers.
You definitely shouldn't have given me any credit because it's finally 70 degrees in Chicago, and even though it's way worse for the sound, I do have the windows open. I can't not have the windows open. I'm really sorry. I need to.
I think anyone living in Chicago should be excused for any weather adaptations at any point in the year. Chicago weather, why? Why?
It's hilarious, though. I last night was sitting on my front porch, not my front porch, my couch in my front room. Front room, as you might sometimes hear it. We actually do say that. Yeah. It was raining a little bit. It was warm. It wasn't quite dark. The streetlights were on. I was like, oh, so this is the thing. As miserable as it can be for most of winter and early spring, every once in a while you get those magical days and you're like, it doesn't matter. I would put up with all of that for this. Also September. April, that. September, doesn't matter. The rest of it doesn't matter.
That is a benefit of having seasons.
Yeah.
There is that. Is that
of like, oh.
Yeah, you know when you got a good day. It's not. There's no question about it. Yeah. Although it's funny because I lived in Los Angeles for a long time, and it's so strange. Now there's humidity in Los Angeles. Yeah, things are changing. Yeah. What is it in Qatar right now, or is it Oman? Where is it where there's a – have you seen like – they've had more rainfall in the last 2 days, 6 inches of rainfall, which is in one day. If you look at their national airport, the planes look like they're in the lake.
Oh,
because they have not, they're not,
there's
it's
no,
more rainfall in one day than in their entire year. Typically. So 5 inches of rainfall fell yesterday, an additional one today. And so they're not. They don't know. They're like, what is happening?
I've been watching. Go ahead.
No. It's just things are changing.
Well,
and so
yeah.
It's just kind of amazing.
There. I mean, I'm sure I've gone into some version of this rant before, and I won't go too far into it. But when I moved to LA, one of the things I talked about being awesome about living in LA is no mosquitoes. Like, I remember, so you cannot lie to me 100%. And tell me.
Oh, yeah, you've mentioned this.
You cannot tell me this.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, we have, like, moved habitats with our bullshit. Like,
yes. There are mosquitoes in L.A. now.
Yeah.
When I came to visit, I was like, wait, what?
Yeah,
I remember
that's not
I got
right.
bit, and I'm like,
yeah, it's not
aren't
right.
I in L.A.?
No, yeah. It's crazy. And so I've been watching my viewing patterns are so insane. But anyway, I've been watching these documentary episodes. First, I did Our Universe, narrated by Morgan Freeman on Netflix. And then now I'm doing Our Planet, I think Our Planet 2. Anyway, whatever. I'm just geeking out over here like nobody's business. But the reason I bring it up here is how clear it becomes, like the dominoes of our environment. And so, you know, people, like, you see the picture of the polar bear on the piece of ice. It's like, oh, so sad. It's like, oh, no, oh, so sad for you, motherfucker, because that ice wasn't supposed to melt like that. Now there's more water than there's supposed to be. Now there's more rain, but only in certain places. I mean, I don't want to say that Al Gore already fucking told us to knock it off, but he kind of did. And like, when you watch this, it's horrifying because it's like, it is us. Like, there's no question. It is us. We have broken the earth. we have broken it. And we're going to pay for this shit. We're going to continue to pay for this shit because we're already paying for it. Anyway, get ready for refugees.
No, it's totally crazy. I was reading some local person said, "Hey, I'm about to move to the Boston area. I'm about to move from London. What's the weather like in Boston?" And then people responded like, "Oh, you know, hi, I'm a person from, you know, I'm a Brit who moved to Boston. The Boston weather is like London weather, but just like a lot better." And I was like, "Wait, what?
Really?
Because we have 4 good days a year,
right?
You know what
right.
I mean? It goes from frigid to sweltering, and then like 4 amazing days. And it used to be September. It used to be, oh yeah, September is the beginning of fall. And but that's now when it's gonna September, go down. It's Miami." In September, it's like late October now is when the whole thing is, it's insane. All right, Ted Lasso, we're going to jump right in. Thank you for cueing, reminding us, boss. I appreciate that.
I just felt like what is more fitting for a show about optimism and belief than to talk about the rapidly declining state of the climate in the world and how wildly inhospitable it's going to be shortly. Mm-hmm. Believe.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. I get heated when it comes to global warming.
Oh, Jesus. See? This is what happens.
Can't believe I'm laughing at that. Oh, God. Jesus. What a day. All right. So where we left off was Akufo and Francis entering the owner's box, and Keely greets them. And then we get this like super daunting camera move. We just don't have moves like this. I looked at this. I rewound this like 4 or 5 times. It's the out of focus back of Nate's head. Like you're in Nate's hair to start. And then you rack focus as you come up over the top. And what's he looking at here, coach?
He's looking up at John Wooden's Pyramid of Success, which obviously has been hanging behind Ted since minute one. That went up in the first sequence of setting up the office.
Right. Yeah, crazy. And then we pivot to, we see him from the front. And walk us through this scene here, coach.
Absolutely. So he's staring up. Roy comes in, notices. What the fuck's that about? Is the look over to Beard. Beard is reading Inverting the Pyramid. Sort of gives like a shrug-ish motion, shakes his head a little, like, I don't fucking know. I love the two of them still don't need to talk. Like, they're so dialed in that it's like a whole conversation just happened behind Nate. He has no idea. And then Roy moves on, and in comes Ted. Good afternoon. All right, y'all good to go on running Nate's false 9 today, yeah? And Nate's... we have here these, well, you'd be fools not to. I thought I heard you'd be false not to. Like he was trying to be clever.
Oh.
But I could be wrong, but I.
You thought it was an instant caramel situation?
I think it might have been. Or something. I don't know. I thought I heard false, though. And I was like, what's he doing there? At any rate.
It did sound like that. But the closed captions
said,
say, you'd be fools not to.
Well, I noticed was that he said, you'd be fools not to, instead of we'd be fools not to.
That's a great call. That is a great call. Flipping that around very quickly. I once got busted that I had been messing around with this girl I was supposed to be messing around with back in the day, because we were talking about going to wherever we were all going, and the two of us were going to travel together. And I said, yeah, we'll meet y'all there. And as soon as the dude later was like, we'll meet you there.
Huh?
And I was like, fuck, did I say we? And he's like, you said we, bro.
No. You... got busted out so easy.
I totally just gave myself away. I can still remember. That's when I was a bartender, I remember. And I was like, oh, we'll meet you guys there. And then later on, the guy was like, we, huh? And I was like, shit. Yeah. Anyway. Not the point of the scene, but it just made me think of it.
I love it. I really like it.
I love it. I want to hear more about that. That sounds great. Yeah. All right. So, yeah, we got to give it a shot. I mean, what happened? What happened between the last time we saw Nate and right now? Like, what is going on?
At this point, he has had this yearning to be a bigger deal here. This should be really all be about his brilliance. And so when he's like, oh, you'd be fools not to, it's a fake. I mean, he probably doesn't recognize it, but it's like a fake confidence. It's a brand of arrogance. That's like, oh, I'll save you all again. We've all worked with that person. Maybe, you know, you've been that person, in which case, please don't do that anymore. Where you like, oh, how would this organization run if I didn't work here? It's like, just fine. Go get hit by a bus. Like, who cares?
Go get
it'll run just fine.
We're tonally, I'm telling you, we're tonally off today because I'm giving Boss extra credit. Coach is telling people to get hit by a bus.
Yeah.
I haven't
mentioned any sort of murder yet.
No.
That's true.
No. Well, that would be on brand. But listen, Boss, Coach and I, due to the chemistry of our brains, are unable to track things in sequential order. When did we see? I'm serious when I say something happened to Nate in the off season. Like since we've seen him last, I don't think enough attention is paid to this particular turn. And God, we've gotten some lovely reviews from people who are just fascinated with Nate throughout the whole show, who disagree with our take and let us know it via the ratings, but. What I'll say is I take a lot of umbrage with the trajectory for Nate. And it feels like a huge, you know, because we're out of sync with it. Every time we feel like we're ahead, they give us this beat and then we're actually behind. Or then every time, oh, okay, now I see what's happening, but then it's three more beats before. So it just almost feels like his arc is messed up. Right now, I'm like, what happened? What inciting event made him turn into fucking Dracula?
See, I think it's actually a continuation, but we didn't necessarily know what we were looking at first. And so he had this yearning, right, for paternal approval, whatever, you know, however you want to frame that. And there was the feeling that goes with it of I'm not good enough, right? Which is why when he gives his big speech in the Make Rebecca Great Again episode, that certainly not Make America Great Again, but in the Make Rebecca Great Again episode, I literally shed tears, which I shared on this podcast. I mean, it was an amazing moment.
Yeah.
But from my own journey, I know that it's true that the hole he's trying to fill doesn't get filled that way. And so he wants to feel better. He wants to feel like a big boy. He wants to feel strong. He wants to feel approved of, whatever it is. And for a while, the Ted love was kind of serving that, but it's a bottomless pit. It's a bucket with a hole in it. It's all the things. So you can't fill it.
Yeah.
And so now he's like, all right, it must be because these guys are screwing me and I'm the real genius around here. And if I were in charge at Richmond, I would finally feel different. Which is incorrect. But
yeah,
you would believe it.
Right, but that is what he believes. Building on that, I think that there is a type of person who, when faced with the reality that they are not for a lot of people, like whatever this specific, I feel like there are TV shows, there are movies, there are bands, there are people, like this is a thing that is not for everyone. I talked to you guys about the TV show Brain Dead, which is about alien slugs who infect the minds of politicians, and sometimes they sing musicals. That show is not for everyone. I loved the shit out of it. Brain Dead, the show, needs to either know who it is, what it is as a show, and like what it's going for and what it wants to do, and who its audience is in order to be successful. And people in the same way have to accept that not everybody is going to love them. Like, Nate could have done this thing where he was like, well, I am a like brilliant football tactician, so that is what I'm going to lean into. I'm going to figure out how to do that. And instead, he's so focused on getting the adoration and the approval and the being popular that he is not leaning into who he actually is as a person. Like, not all of us are going to be ballerinas. Sometimes we play Cheshire Cats, that and you just need to learn how to figure that out.
I love that, and I feel like it leaned into a couple of different things, but one that's jumped out at me excuse me, is the whole idea of the shadow. Like, I've been looking at, anyway, it's who I am. I've been watching some stuff about Carl Jung. Leave me alone. Do what you want. Anyway. You're a nerd. But the whole idea of like embracing our whole self, embracing our shadow. And Nate has not yet gotten to the point of an observation that I made recently of somebody I know personally, which is there's nothing cooler than somebody who knows that they are not cool.
Yes. Yep.
Right. I mean, it's, you know, I'm trying to think of like a good sort of like universal example. I don't know, Elvis Costello. I don't know who I would say, but like somebody who you just know that in their life, they get that their coolness comes from, I'm not from everybody, not for everybody. I mean,
I'm going to throw out there Weird Al Yankovic. Cause I'm pretty sure
100%.
Every person alive likes at least one of his songs.
Oh, yeah.
You might not consider yourself a fan, but he did one thing one time that you liked.
Oh, yeah. No, that's a great example. And he's not like, oh, here's my opus, or this is my Christmas album. No. He's Weird Al, baby. If you want a fucking pun wrapped in a music video that'll make you laugh, he is your dude. And if that's not what you came for, don't go to Weird Al. I mean, that's a perfect example of what I mean. Nate doesn't know who he is yet. He's saying love me, but he couldn't tell you who the me is if you made him. He doesn't know who he is yet.
Yes. He is at this point the very opposite of Beard. Beard knows exactly who he is, and he doesn't need anybody to love him.
That's 100%.
So, yes, I think you're all I love everything you guys are saying. So at some point in the last couple days, Nate decided to rat out Ted. Like, he decided to pull the trigger on that, right? Then he decided to be a prick, like a total prick, which is how he's acting. You know, you'd be crazy not to. Like, there was a beat in the huddle where everyone said they're going to find the rat and kill him. And his reaction to that is not to like exude humility. You know, his reaction is to double down into like complete douchiness. And you go, wow, like this is like, it's like the wrong decision on every. And I also think he thinks that Beard might be on to him, you know?
Well, yeah, I don't feel like Beard. I don't feel like Beard did his best job of hiding the fact that he's on to him, certainly. And I actually hadn't thought about this. But in a way, does Beard essentially saying, I know it was you, Fredo, force Nate's hand on something? Like, if Nate was kind of, I'm angry, I'm in, I'm out, does Beard saying, I know it was you, Fredo, mean, well, I'm out now.
Okay. Yeah, right.
I better get the fuck out of here because I'm not long for this world once he tells or once they all decide, you know, come with the bars of soap.
So I don't want to jump ahead too much in this episode, but I think one of the things we will learn is that Rupert talking to Nate at the funeral might have been one of the things that changed for Nate recently, and one of the things that would impact Nate's understanding of his future at Richmond.
Yeah,
good point.
So maybe maybe that was it. Maybe at that point he was like, fuck this. Somebody else is interested in me. I don't need you, Ted.
Yeah,
that's Rebecca certainly Rebecca certainly noted it. And whenever there's a fissure like that in an organization, you can definitely get in there. If you get in the person's ear and add to that, if you add to the like, ah, you're the real brains of the operation, you're the what does that fucking guy know? I mean, any energy like that that you receive, you know, he's scrolling through. We know how he scrolls through X, formerly known as Twitter, just almost compulsively. So he's probably soaking up a lot of that information and seeking it, frankly, because he wants to feel like the big deal, right?
Yeah. So, all right. So you're right. And, you know, credit to Rupert for having that innate ability to find the crack and drive a wedge. You know, like just having some people just know. They know
where
to apply, they know where to apply pressure. You can't teach it. There's a little girl in my daughter's fourth grade class who is like a master class watching her pit people against each other, and you go, oh my god, like it's so bad that the other mothers warned us when we went to the school about this.
No shit.
Like, yeah, they're like, oh, just
be mindful, you
know, be mindful because she's she likes to pit, she likes to hoard humans and then throw them against each other in a battle drum. So my daughter didn't get caught up in it, thank God. But like, that's fourth grade. No one's
right.
That's you know, no one's teaching. It's not lectures that she's watching on YouTube. It's like, she just knows how to move people around. Yeah. So yeah, we ought to give it a shot. Why change it now? Roy says, and, Higgins rolls up and, did you get kicked out of your office again? No, temporary relocation while they change the carpet in there. It was absolutely covered in dog shit. Why was that, boss? Why was it covered in dog shit?
Because Higgins gets down.
That's it. Okay. it's nothing to do with barking in Palace, I'm guessing.
All right. No, they had new mascot dogs.
Also, I think this is relevant for this scene. Who could be further from Nate in this moment of arrogance and narcissism and me than Higgins, who like gives up his office to Dr. Sharon, who then like, yeah, we're gonna have this dog shit over my office. I'm not gonna make a fuss about it. Nobody even fucking knew till I chimed in on this conversation. I've been here working in the I've been working in the gym. Like, he is across right now from bench press, doing whatever it is he's supposed to be doing as head of football operations. Like, he is devoid of the media.
Of ego. Yeah. By the way, I don't want to backtrack too much, but I had a visceral reaction to Nate looking at the Pyramid of Success. And here's where it comes from.
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck you. You don't get to look at that.
Ooh, say more.
It's just this thing where I'm like, you can't use the force. Like, if you're going to use the dark side of the force, you can't pretend you're a light sider. Like, don't look at, you know what I mean? You can't use a Jedi holocron if you're a Sith. Like, go fuck yourself. That is for good people. And you can't even read it. It's like a white man can't jump. But he's like, you can't hear Jimmy.
Oh, that's
no, I can hear, you know what I mean? It's like, no, you can't. I know you're looking at that pyramid, but I promise you, you're not reading it. Well, like, I promise you, you are not getting what John Wooden's laying out.
Well, right. Yes, I agree with what you're saying. And I think it's important to remember that these lessons can be applied in negative ways. Like, they're not intended to be applied in negative ways. But like, I used to tell people all the time with, you know, when I youth stuff that I've created, whatever. Listen, I do the same thing the Bloods and the Crips do. I just do it for their good. Like, that's, you know, yeah. So like,
I literally say the same thing every day.
That's really
funny. Yeah, obviously. Obviously.
That's really funny. But you know what I mean? So like, as I watched him, I was like, oh no, like, it is so dangerous to have this understanding in the wrong hands. I guess, was more my reaction.
So this is going to be shocking to everyone. Probably not. I don't think that he was looking at it thinking, like, number one, I'm going to study this and use this to my advantage. Or number two, that he was looking at it. What I thought he was looking at was, like, that doesn't understand the full picture.
Isn't that quaint?
Oh. Not even isn't that quaint, but, like, this okay. understanding is incomplete. This lesson that you're trying to teach isn't going to work in the real world. Or this isn't... Ooh. Like, there are all of these issues where that might be what you are going for, but you do not have a full enough understanding of how people actually act in order for that to be successful.
You know, it's really interesting, and the pyramid's got a lot of different elements, but in terms of what you're saying and the pyramid as a representation of that holistic, you know, character building version of how we're going to get things done, is Nate is all head. In terms of football, it's false nine. It's park the bus. It's whatever. Like, he is not the coach at this point. Like, Roy's attraction to coaching was, you're not in the locker room with them. You can't look them in the eye, right? Like, he, like, to Nate, he's like, look them in the fucking eye. Like, you are pawns. Move where I tell you. Do what I tell you when I fucking tell you, and that's it. And so, yeah, I get what you're saying. I think he would look at that and go, they still don't know what to do.
That's a great take. And coach, you've talked about how the top of the pyramid is, what is it? Competence?
It's competitive greatness, but he said later on, love, yeah, that love would be at the top of the pyramid.
Which is... I'm sure that's exactly what Nate's saying.
Oh, yeah.
Ted, about the carpet being full of dog shit, Ted says, oh, yeah, I've been there, done that.
That made me laugh. There's just throwaway lies that crack me up, and that was one of them where I'm like, why, Ted? What do you mean by that? Like, what?
I promise.
Why'd you have dog shit all over your carpet?
Yeah, no. What? You have not. I doubt that. Well, anyone else got anything they want to talk about before we head out there?
Yeah. I could use some advice. So it's Roy, and everybody turns like, oh, is it happening? So we go, well, hold on. And then, Roy, are you saying you want to become a diamond dog? Fuck no. I'm just saying I wouldn't mind being in the room whilst it fucking happens. And this is quite Ted, because he could be like, well, either you're a diamond dog or you're not. But no. Yeah. Okay. Well, how about a one-time visitor's pass for our junkyard dog here? Yeah. And everybody votes with barking and howls as one would as a diamond dog. Yeah,
obviously.
Completed with the wolf. Diamond dogs mount up. And yeah, I gotcha. Is running over to Higgins because we're going to try climbing through the window again. And this time, Higgins is like, I think I'm just going to stay put, which is this, okay, good idea. Yeah. Like, I love them both sort of like going back over and going, yeah, that's not going to go well. Forget it. You live, you learn. Right? Thank you, Alanis.
Beard doesn't skedaddle very much, but he's skedaddled.
Yeah, to up and close out the of door. That. Yeah.
Yeah, Beard kind of operates on his own,
mm-hmm.
you know, like at his own pace, and much like Boss. You can't imagine Boss skedaddling for, you know.
Yeah, that's actually true. I can't. That
Unless
doesn't
she
seem
deems
very
it skedaddle worthy, right?
Yeah. Really? I see you moving with purpose, but not like, oh, I better rush over there.
Yeah. I can't. Unless Boss deems it worthy, then I can see her skedaddling all the way, you know, Timbuktu and back. But only, like, that's for Beard, that was an appropriate. He was like, oh, let me grab that. Like, zip, he was up and out. Even though Nate was closer to the door.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah, no, that actually makes sense. I walk very, very quickly because it's silly to me to not do that. You should be, wherever you're wanting to go, you should be getting there faster. As fast as possible.
Ooh.
Yeah, but whatever. Right, but you're the one deeming that speed appropriate. For it would be the same in reverse. If someone said slow down, you'd be like, It's not even the rapidity of it as much as who makes the decision. And so Beard, who is more than happy to leisurely read his book with his feet up on the desk, hops up. And then, yes, Coach, you live what you learn. You get a little Atlantis joke there and keep going.
All right, Roy, bark away. And he leans forward, puts his chin on his hand. I mean, he's ready. Let's get some boy talk going. All right. Remember I told you I had to do that photo shoot thing with Keely? Yeah, we got it. Yeah. Okay. I know I said I fucking hate doing those things, and I do fucking hate doing those things, but in the end, they didn't use a single picture with me in it, and it hurt my feeling. One of the funniest moments for me. I don't know why I say hurt my feeling, but I guess it's just the like lack of familiarity with this kind of talk that he would like... say it incorrectly.
It has one feeling.
That's it.
Hurt.
Is it like when Sprite labeled its cans as with antioxidant? Just the one? Like antioxidants were big, so they're like, we got
funny.
It.
We got it. Antioxidant. That's funny. So, yeah. So, this, in terms of his progress, I think it's such a big moment for Roy. And yes, it's funny. But I think it's important for us to like this vulnerability. This is the guy who we met, first of all, Jesus, Mary, and fuckface Joseph, and then who came into the locker room and glared at Ted with the Roy Shire eyes. So for him to now be standing here amidst a Diamond Dogs meeting, sharing that his feeling got hurt, is just such a long way from where he started. So just want to highlight that.
I don't know why they chose the single feeling. It is funny. It's a great line. I think about it all the time. But it's like in his journey, having too many having plural feelings might feel like too much of a bridge too far. So he's like, okay, I have a feeling and this hurt it. And that's it.
So as everyone's, oh yeah. Okay. Yeah. Get it. Mm-hmm. Then we get, Higgins, in year 5, I was not allowed in the class photo because I developed a rare smile allergy. And Ted rolls with it. Oof.
Ted rolls with it and then looks at Beard.
And Beard goes, and
shakes his head. Ted also says to Beard, like, I don't. And boss, what does Beard say here?
Sorry, I'm not. What am I looking for?
No. He says not the same situation. It just feels like a you line.
Oh, not the same situation. I was looking down further. I don't know why I was expecting a swear word, but I immediately went to wherever the asterisks were.
That's
and I'm like,
really
no, I'm seeing
funny.
Nothing. If you want me to say a line, funny. It's going to be a swear, and I'm not seeing any swears.
No. It's not that one. It's just, it's so funny that Higgins is like, well, here's my whatever. And then Ted himself, he hears it. Looks at Beard, shakes him off like the third base coach, and then Beard goes, not the same situation. Like he's going to redirect us back on point because that's the first. It's so we talk about like rerouting the or derailing the conversation, and Roy like finally has opened up, and then Higgins says something that has nothing, absolutely nothing to do.
Yeah. That what you were talking about with the I don't want to say re-railing, that sounds dirty somehow, but there needs to be, if you've ever hung out with people where the point is to get stoned and talk a lot, you need to designate one person as the air traffic controller. And they're the ones that are like, okay, so we're going to get back to this story 3 tangents ago.
Nice.
We need to circle back to this thing that we never finished talking about.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
There's order there. I like that.
I was assigned that task when I was hanging out with a couple of grad school friends once, but one time they took too long, and before I could get back to telling them whatever it was, I had shoved an entire piece of pizza into my mouth. Now, it's Chicago square cuts, so it's not a big slice, But I had, so whatever it was, I just had to like point and keep pointing until I'd eaten enough, and then I could tell them what was going on.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Got it. Now, it seems like a good, it seems like a good job for someone who does not have ADHD. not the same situation. And Roy continues. Keep going, Coach.
The thing is, she looks so fucking great on her own without me. So natural. It would have actually been fucking weird if I was in the pictures. And then at Rebecca's dad's funeral, Jamie fucking Tart tells her he's fucking in love with her. So that gets big reactions. Whoa, da! And best was he's still alive from Beard, which is a reasonable, response. Because what? Instead of beating him to death, I fucking forgave him. Like, he can't forgive himself for forgiving him. And I'm still fucking furious about it. Wow. A lot there.
I thought that was kind of a, I know Roy, it's good that he's sharing, but I was like, it's one thing to share. I wasn't in the picture and kind of hurt my feeling. It's another thing to be like, hey, this guy that we all work with is a dick. I was like, oh wow. Like, it's such a weird, I think he's like, did he get carried away with the sharing or is it?
Oh,
is it,
I don't think so.
No.
With the way these guys share?
I know, but they have a vested interest. So the first one, the response is, fuck, that sucks. Sorry, man. The second one is like, it could affect the other dude's job because these are his like managers.
Well, it's already affecting the other dude's job. Everyone's affected. Like, they take don't shit where you eat to places we can't even fathom. So Jamie doing it affected everyone, potentially. Roy now knowing about it. Like, he could not tell them, and everybody could wonder what the fuck Roy's problem is, too. You know what I mean? Like, I think, I don't think his sharing it in this setting is where that went off the tracks. Like,
I guess it's not off the tracks, but I don't see them as the same exact sharing type of thing. One of them is like, sorry, man, that fucking sucks.
Yeah, one is all him. Yeah, I guess that's true. One is all his to share.
Yeah. And then I'm like, okay, that's good. The second one, when he was like, oh, God, I was like, Jesus, dude. Like, whoa, pump the brakes. Like, he's like, and that fucking prick up.
Interesting.
Like, oh, my God. Like, that, it hit me hard that was the next thing.
Interesting. Yeah, I didn't and have that Ted, reaction, Ted goes, but I get
hey, Ted goes, hey, thanks for barking at us, like, right away. And I thought, huh, man, you should have let him, like, if that was number two, I wonder what the fuck number three was going to be. You know, I'm like, Jesus Christ, he was on a roll.
Right.
And for the purposes of not making this go too long, you know, like not having an endless episode of the Diamond Dogs, Ted just, you know, sort of cuts it off right there. But I don't know. I'm curious, boss's take.
Cause that really, I mean, I'm hearing you now and I'm like, okay. I mean, that was not my reaction at all.
You didn't notice it in the moment. Right.
Not
yeah, that's
that
okay.
Element.
Yeah, that's all right.
There was a bit for me that, I mean, you said that wasn't necessarily Roy's secret to tell or whatever. But Roy played a role in it. Like, there's a part of that what Roy needed to tell people was, my girlfriend's ex-boyfriend hit on her. So, like, that is a thing that happened to him a little bit. I feel like, Jamie, don't hit on your coworkers' girlfriends if you don't want them telling your coworkers the shit you do. Like, there's a part of it that I'm just like, well, you did what you did.
You guys are so funny. I love it. You're both shot. Like, hey, like, wow.
You did it, Jamie.
Don't start none, won't be none.
Yeah, man. Like...
I know it.
I don't know what to tell you, dude. Like, you did that. The bigger issue for me is that part of what it sounded like Roy was upset about was that Keeley didn't need him. And I think that this is something that men struggle with a lot, that they need, not need, but that the idea of their partners being wholly successful outside of them, to the point that...
No, we don't.
I think, who was it? I want to say that it was Ethan Hawke was talking about how Uma Thurman like was super successful in Kill Bill and her career was going well. And like, I don't know if she was nominated for awards, but people loved the shit out of her. And he was like, in the meantime, my career was stalling. That's obviously going to have an impact on our relationship. And I was like, why? Wait, hold on. Why?
No, I'm with you. That doesn't compute for me. But I'm sure maybe if you're both, I guess if you're in the same field, maybe that the obvious sort of, you know, difference between your career trajectories might be, you know, cause consternation or something. But I mean, yeah, if you, we talk a lot on this podcast about how much we love when people truly are excited for someone else succeeding. You know, we just talked about it last episode about how happy Roy was, like, oh, we were saving that champagne. Should we open? It's like, no, he was genuinely so excited for her that she's going to be a CEO. She's going to have her own company. You know, you can feel it. And we love that. So in that, if you apply it to the example about Ethan Hawke, you would say, yeah, no, he should be satisfied with.
He should be happy.
Excited. Yeah.
Right. And this is going to be something that I will touch on a lot later, but I think one of the ways in which we don't teach emotional intelligence is that you can have a feeling about something and that doesn't require anybody else to do anything about it. It would be nice if people were able to listen to your feelings, but if you're pissed off about something and I didn't actually do anything, you're just pissed off because I don't want to date you. That hasn't really happened. But like, if you are only pissed off because somebody doesn't want to be your friend, like they didn't really do anything wrong. They are allowed to choose who they want to be in relationships with. And it might hurt your feelings and that sucks. And you have my sympathy on that part, but you can't be pissed off because the girl at the gym didn't want to go out and date with you. Like,
I mean, I can.
You can, but what I'm going to say is you being pissed off about that thing doesn't require action from anybody else.
A lot of buttons for me here. I'm trying not to have this episode go 5 hours, but you got an incel rant coming your way. And you got a don't speak ill of the dead rant coming your you're touching on some stuff here. No, well, really? Yeah, I'll be quick on the incel one being the more recent. So I joke about it sometimes, but I really don't get the incel thing. Like I do not
fucking God,
fundamentally Lord. Get how this became a serious conversation, how this became a thing that we're really addressing in the world. If no one will fuck you, you've got to go figure out how to be fuckable. Like, people who are the most invested in this, like, oh, only the strong shall survive. Fucking pop a mint, hit the gym, cop some gear, get your fucking life together, and someone will fuck you. It's the bar is outrageously low out here for fucking. Let's just be honest, right? So if you're not clearing that bar, that's on you, bro. That's on you. Why you gonna shoot up the whole fucking town because nobody will fuck you? Do you think that's gonna be the magic bullet now? Literally, now somebody's gonna be like, "Ooh, I wasn't into him before, but now that he shot my auntie in the leg, I'm pretty sure I'm gonna fuck him." No, I don't. The whole incel thing is fucking crazy to me. It is pure insanity that we are having a serious conversation that there are men who are aggrieved and feel that the rest of us should be providing some sort of fucking remedy for them for the fact that no one wants to recreate or procreate with them. I don't get it.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I agree with everything that you just said. And just to be clear, I think that the incel movement has focused on sex. What this actually is a group of mediocre white men who two or three generations ago would have had a successful career and a family, maybe not a super happy one, but in the 50s when women needed men in order to survive, somebody would have
picked. That's interesting.
So what they are actually... The cause of this is a loss of status because they used to be good enough and now they aren't. The measurement has changed and they are pissed off that their C-level work isn't getting A grades.
That's really insightful. And I saw an article, I'll see if I can track it down. I'll even share it in the community, that was talking about this in this generation in terms of heterosexual relationships, that men and women are drifting apart. And that in part, that's because of women basically progressing sociopolitically, blah, 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 and men not. So it's very in line with what you just, I mean, it's pretty much the premise you just presented that, yeah, they're just sort of like, here I am above ground in my khakis. Yeah. What's the problem?
I don't
know. Yeah.
I would say that, I think we use incel as a catch-all for a lot of different things. So there's like different types. And if you're saying, there's someone who's going to shoot up anything right away, like goodbye. Good. You know, I have no sympathy. I cannot get on your wavelength. I don't, whatever. If you're going to resort to violence, if you're going to resort to injury, I don't have any, there is nothing for, I got nothing there for you.
Gotcha.
But I will say that, Boss is 100% right. Everything you guys have said is 100% right. I just think we need to step back and look, take a look at why. And I have sympathy for these men. Yes, by and large, a lot of mediocre white men. Yeah, right. Yes, yes. That will eventually become a lot of mediocre black men. It'll eventually become a lot of mediocre Hispanic men. It's not limited to white men. It's just that we're the first. We're at the highest stage, and we're going to get knocked out. It will affect all men until men begin to improve. This is why we watched Ted Lasso. This is why we started talking about avatars. This is why all of it is a tumbler. This is why we talk about how there are amazing female role models now all over television and film, and there are not that many amazing male role models that don't resort to violence, that don't have violence as a component of their system, their ethos. So it's easy to disregard these guys or say like, oh, fucking, it's not as easy as Papa Mint for some of these guys. Some of them have mental illness. Some of them have, you know, it's like, again, I don't know. I just feel badly for anyone who's alone and doesn't understand it. And anyone who doesn't have the right parenting or the right peer group or the right, you know, when you're alone, it is so debilitating. And then you start to constrict and you start to, and you play the blame and shame game, you know, like, oh, who's at fault for your thing? And yes, if you have the advocacy, if you have the agency to jump into a gym and say, you know what, like, maybe going to a gym isn't going to get me laid or whatever, but it might make me feel a little bit better. I've been reading about, you know, it's all of these little things, but it's not in and of itself. The reason we know about this now is because it's a pretty big thing. It's the numbers are notable. And once upon a time, you're right, they could, you know, sort of hover around the edges of society or whatever, and women needed them. Now women have choices and are wisely using them. And so you have this segment of the population that feels
you know where we're lost. Fucked up when we let them get credit cards. I said it then, I'll say it now, god damn it.
Listen, that was only 1974.
Man. Yeah, no, yeah, man, it's 50 years, baby. It's 50 years now. That's why it's on my mind, because I've been seeing stuff. Yeah. I mean, no, she doesn't need you because she shouldn't have needed you then. Like, what part of the, like, and this goes for a lot of, you know, in my day kind of talk, is like, a lot of things people point back to, I'm like, yeah, because the world was fucked up. Like, they say it as if, like, the good old days when a woman needed him. I'm like, you mean when women put up with abuses none of us would even want to know about so that they could, you know, have a roof over their fucking head? Then that's what we want to. I think there's a lot of of romanticizing a time when it wasn't that there wasn't pain. It's just that certain people weren't having to experience or deal with the pain. And now they're like, oh, wait, there's a problem here? No, there's always been a fucking problem, bro. It's always been a problem. When that woman wanted to be able to, I don't know, buy the skirt or pants or jacket she wanted to buy and needed to go ask her husband, couldn't open a fucking bank account. Like, that was a problem. You just weren't inconvenienced by it. In fact, you were empowered by it. So you didn't see it as a problem. It was always a problem.
100%. Absolutely. Yeah. Here's something that I noticed not long ago. When I became a father, Coach, you and I, we each have children. Boss, you have nieces and nephews. I remember thinking that I would do the bulk of my hard parenting was to protect my daughters from the patriarchy, and like the forces out there that were out to get them and stop them from being who they were meant to be. And as I parented, as I became more of a veteran parent, I realized, oh no, it's equal, if not more, to difficult to raise good boys in this world, because mm-hmm. the patriarchy automatically conditions them to be part of the patriarchy and make all the wrong choices. And then, you know, so it's not enough to just say, oh, I got to protect my girls. It's like, no, wait a second. Like you got to raise good boys. Not enough people raise good boys. They still don't.
Yep.
I look at the kids that my children go to school with, and I'm like, no, even our generation who should know better.
Right.
They missed it. They missed it. This is why, like, I have such hope for, you know, Gen Z and Alpha. It's like millennials. I do not think missed it. I think millennial parents are on it about raising boys way, way more than Gen X. It kills me to say that, but
yeah.
I do think they have an idea. But it's a huge, huge part of the problem, and that's a structural shift. And the incels we're talking about are older than that. They are right now the people that are not able to find mates and that sort of thing, and or companionship or friends or peer groups or whatever. They don't have the skill set. So, yes, it's a huge catch-all term. And I don't want to say that, like, I align with their values or anything like that, but I think anytime someone's alone, my heart bleeds a little bit, and I wish there was a better system for them to be, you know, sort of welcomed into a community that can accept them, and if they're willing to change, and if they're willing to sort of evaluate their, you know, where they are.
I want to toss out, and I'm serious actually, that you have exemplified curious, not judgmental.
Thanks, Coach. Yeah, right. I mean, it has a human component to me, because every time we think it's so easy, and I am so guilty of this. Whenever we think about a group of anything, doesn't matter, Republicans, let's say, right? My mind automatically goes to like Marjorie Taylor Greene or something. You know, I think of the worst possible, and I go, no, don't think like that. Think of the best possible Republican. You know, like there's this judge that took us on when we went out to Montana, there was this Republican judge that took us out on a, we went to a City Slickers thing. And this guy was the best human being. He was a wonderful man. And he had never voted blue in his life. Unthinkable from where he came from in his life. And he was in his late 70s when I knew him. He's gone now, passed away. But all he tried, I remember him telling how hard he tried to protect. He would see these criminals come in, and he would have to send, you know, like mandatory sentences. And then he would sentence them, and he'd go back in his chambers and cry, because he could not save them. He had to. And you know what I mean? It's like, this was not a bad man. Yes, he was a different political party. He's in a, you know what I'm saying? Anytime you think about any type of community that you might not align with, right? You have to say, oh, are we going to think about it, about the worst? It's so easy to go to the worst segment of that, the worst 1%. But we have little in common with those people in that worst 1%. But then you think of everybody else, and you're like, there is middle ground. There are places where we can come together again. It's just difficult, and we're conditioned to be oppositional in the modern era.
So I hate the phrase "be curious, not judgmental."
Woo!
I have come to hate it. Not just that it doesn't align with what I believe individually, but I think it has become so reductive and so not for the initial, for the original intention or point, that now it has become sort of a if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. And I'm like, well, that's terrible advice, because a lot of the times you need to say the not nice shit in order to get problems fixed. I think when you say be curious, not judgmental, and it is not applied to a very specific, when you are introduced to a new concept, idea, person, etc., then it becomes a let's never call out anything bad ever. You cannot perpetually be curious. You have to at some point draw a conclusion based on the facts in front of you. And I'm not saying that you need to only look at two or three facts. You can consider all of the information that's relative, but at a certain point, you can't just say, well, there's no way of knowing. We'll never know. I mean, is the jury still out on Hitler, or are we able to judge and say that guy was bad and did
I think
bad
we
things?
Can all agree he was an okay artist.
Well, the dog pictures were not terrible. If Always Sunny is telling me the truth.
But yeah, I hear you. I definitely
again, you're picking the worst 1%.
No.
As your example, I understand where you're coming from, but I don't think the nature of the. I think you're saying that the meaning of that term has changed, and you don't like the way it's changed.
Yeah,
you don't in and of itself, it's not a bad philosophy. It's just that at some point, someone has to make this is again. We'll get to it next season on Ted Lasso, but you will hear me talk about decisiveness quite a bit.
I thought of that too. Yeah, I think yes, I'm with you. I'm with you, boss. In that, like in the DEI work I've done, people will, you know, oh, you have to be accepting, and so then it's almost feels like people are being taught to just live in this sort of like middle gray, nothing's good, nothing's bad, there is no right, there is no wrong, there is right, which is not the same as saying I have this view of X moral issue, thing we should do at work, whatever. You have a different view. I disagree with that view, and I can see that you're a separate human being with a separate lens, with a separate, right? All those things. And I think at its core, for me, at least, I should say this, I didn't know Walt Whitman. So in terms of how I heard it and experience it, it's more about keeping in mind that there's more to it than that point of disagreement. So coaches, you know, so when coach says that about incels, and mine was, you know, the definition of reductive, I get where you're like, well, you know, there are people who might be using that phrase who really might be looking around the world and going, well, I've been told to be this one way, but now it's another way. And I'm just, and also I'm lonely and I don't have the vocabulary to even express that. Never mind, do something about it. And thinking about how to, not even thinking about how to do that, just leaving room for the fact that that might exist, which generally, once people get on my nerves to a certain degree, I'm like, eh, fuck that.
No, I get it.
I have to own that, yeah.
No. It makes, and also, you know, the DEI world, too, you know, on behalf of white people, you do DEI stuff, and you're like, oh, huh, what a hassle, right? You don't think, like, yeah, well, but you have reduced me. You know, it's like getting pulled over. Oh, hope I don't get a fucking ticket from this asshole. It's not like we're going to die. So the stakes are very different. Incels, I'm 100% with you, coach. And I only when you step back and you see, like, I don't, again, like I said, if violence or injurious, like goodbye. I don't, you know what I mean? I have no time for it. And boss is 100% right that, in the way that the concept has migrated. I disagree completely. I think it's why I love this show. Be curious and not judgmental. One of the many reasons. At least be curious out of the gate. And
yeah,
Boss
no,
did say
I, that. That right. I agree right. with. That yeah. part I agree with. It only is when it continues for your entire interaction with a person. When you say, oh, well, we don't know. You know, when you say that you have sympathy for anybody that's lonely. Okay, so I have sympathy for someone who is lonely. That doesn't change the fact for me that in order to not be lonely, that person needs to adapt to who they are trying to find in the world. And whether that means not just going to the gym. Like, I will again say that one of my favorite tweets of all time was some guy that said, incels on Twitter are always saying that you need to be a Chad or a 10 in order to get a woman. In the meantime, the hot women I know all say, I would let Matt Berry hit Raw. Like, people are on Twitter talking about how Jack Black could get it all day long. Like, actually what you need to do is work on your personality and being a good person and being a caring partner and all of these things. And I am not saying that I don't have sympathy for people who are lonely. I am saying that my sympathy for them being lonely doesn't fundamentally change the fact that those are the things you need to do in order to get a partner. My sympathy, you have it. That doesn't change. It doesn't mean that the situation is different.
Yeah, I think that's that. I think, well, a couple of things, but yes to what you just said, boss. And I think what you do with it from what you do with the loneliness or spurred by the loneliness is what the rest of us are discussing. So if your loneliness equals, for example, I'm not saying getting online and being on some forum saying, you know, I just really don't get what's happening these days. I thought that being this kind of guy would work for me. It's not working. What's going on? Let's discuss. Or, you know, I'm really sad about it. Everybody take care. Okay. If that loneliness is the spark that leads you to making sure you let women online who don't pay attention to you know that they're really ugly anyway.
They're mid. Or, they're very mid.
Right. They're mid or whatever, you know, you're going to do. Then, okay, now we're now addressing your behavior that has come from the loneliness. Yes. I'm not judging you. I'm not judging loneliness. Exactly. I understand loneliness. I've felt lonely. What I am judging, though, is your behavior.
Yes.
And I'm saying that's an unacceptable way for you to proceed because you feel lonely. And I would toss in, even in the scene where we get sort of the crystallization, you know, playing darts with Rupert, Ted has come to some conclusions about Rupert. It started at the gala.
Yes, he absolutely has.
It started at the gala, and he said, you know, Roops is a hitman. If you can call him, tell him to come over. He was basically saying, I know what you fucking did. We both know what you did. I'm not going to get into it here with you, but just so you know, I know. It was very close to what Beard did to Nate, now that I think about it. And after the gala, he tells Rebecca, he tells Boss, hey, you think nobody else sees this guy? He didn't say it in these words, but you think nobody else sees this guy is full of shit? I do. Now, he could have gone over there and said, hey, let's be pals, Roopy Doops, and play. And I'm left-handed, just in case you were wondering, right? But he doesn't. He suckers him in. He totally suckers him in and takes him. He takes him. Like, this is like out of like a Pool Sharp type movie. This is from The Sting. And he does all of that because he has concluded, you are a fucking problem. You are torturing my friend and you gotta go.
Yes.
And I just got you to agree to be banned
right.
from the dog track.
Yeah, because maybe Rupert was super heartbroken that Rebecca had left him, but he was mistreating Rebecca, so Ted needed to make sure that stopped. The behavior stopped.
Right. Yeah. I think there's room. I do think there's room for both, but I think we do have to have places where we draw, where we say what we'll accept, what we'll be a party to, what we, right? All those things. And I think it's like a kid, you could have a kid in school who's acting out and hitting people. I remember actually there was one young lady, she had a ton of real issues. Like she was definitely going through some things. And what I would have guessed unprofessionally, you know, non-professional, I guess, was some like mania kind of a deal. But she was like literally hitting motherfuckers in school. Like, it's like, there's just not shit that goes on in this school. Like, polypropylene is not a place where people are like, you know, oh, so-and-so just hauled off and just fucking belted somebody. It's just not a thing. And one day, this rather large football player who she just hit in my classroom turned to me after it was all over because I jumped on it and, you know, got her out of the room and blah, 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 blah. And he turned to me and said, one of these days I'm going to hit her back. And I was like, okay, I understand. Please, like, please try not to actually do that. But I can't ask him, I don't feel, in any fairness, I can't ask him to go home and contemplate how hard it must be out of control. Like, sure, you can do that, but at the same time, I don't want you to hit me. Whatever the fuck's going on in your life, I don't want you to hit me. And I think that's a perfectly reasonable line to draw without sort of being dismissed as, oh, you're not being curious. And that's not at all what you did, Coach, but I'm just saying in terms of what you laid out, boss, I see what you're saying, and I'm with you on that. There's shit that I just find unacceptable. I've thought about it. I've looked into it. I've searched my soul, and this is where I landed. And I don't have to keep flip-flopping all around the place after I've done all that.
Yeah. Shockingly, we agree on this. I will say the only thing to add to that is you say, like, this isn't something that we're going to flip-flop on. Definitely. Absolutely not. What I would also say is there is nothing within my, you know, sort of framework that says if the girl gets help or medication or something else happens and she comes to school and she's not hitting people, we can now say, oh, she's no longer a danger. She has stopped the behavior. The new information says I can feel differently about her and I don't have to be afraid she's going to hit people because she stopped hitting people. Like, it isn't even condemning somebody for the rest of the time that you know them. It's saying, as of right now, you're hitting me and I can't let you do that. And when you stop hitting me, we could do this again, but not until then.
You know, there's a line to be drawn, or I don't know, a distinction to be made between who you are and what you've done. And this comes up in terms of the conversation of guilt and shame. It comes up in a lot of different places and something I've been looking at from a couple of different angles. But I think it is sometimes with the cure, because even the story that Ted tells is those guys dismissed him out of hand. They didn't say, oh, I bet he can't play football or I bet he can't ride a bike, right? Like, it wasn't a thing. It was just like, he as a person is disposable. We pay no attention to him. He is irrelevant as a human being. He has no value. And I think that's the kind of judgment. I think that's more the judgment that I'm invested in avoiding if I can. And it's hard. Like, people, you know, you mentioned Marjorie Taylor Greene earlier. Like, it is hard for me to hold on to her humanity. Like, I'm being serious actually right now. Cause right now, like, if you were like, you get one wish, Orlando, what are we gonna do with her? She's getting fucking launched into the sun. Like, that's the end of that. You know what I mean? So, like, but you know what I mean? So I think, yeah, it's not easy to separate that. But I think we can judge actions without condemning people.
It does feel rough to be not taken seriously, which leads us to our next line, which is, Ted finds out that Nate has something to share here. And what does he say here, Coach?
There's something I have to confess as well. So Ted gives him the green light. Go ahead, Nate Dog. Roy.
And they think he's going
to
say.
Yeah. He's going to confess to the, but.
Outing Ted.
Yeah. But here we go. Roy, when Keely and I went shopping the other day, I kissed her. And Roy, so of course, Beard is like, sweet Jesus, this fucking guy, like that look on his face. I have been in that meeting where you're like, this fucking guy is killing.
He thought it was terrible. I mean, he didn't even know about this.
He didn't even know this one, right?
He's just laying landmines everywhere.
He's the worst. He is just the worst, right? In this moment. So that Beard reaction killed me. So Roy very nonchalantly says, yeah, she told me about it. It's okay. Nate is visibly disappointed that it's okay. I kissed her. I kissed your girlfriend. Roy still, yeah, we're good. And Nate, now Nate is offended. All Jamie did was talk to her, and you wanted to kill him. Don't you at least want to headbutt me or something? You made a mistake, Nate. Don't worry about it. No, no. I deserve to be headbutted. At which point, Beard graciously offers, I'd be happy to headbutt you, Nate.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I can do that.
At which point, and what I love about this, that moment, and I actually realize that I have a beard, an actual beard character over the years of my life that I'll share about that in a second, because it really made me laugh out loud when I realized. But Ted knows Beard. And Ted knows how Beard feels right now about Nate. Ted knows what Beard thought was going to be confessed. Ted knows that this headbutt ain't got shit to do with that kiss of Keely. And he's like, oh, you know what? I think that's enough right now. He's like, Diamond Dogs disband, because this meeting is about to become a brawl. And I just thought that was, like, everybody playing their roles in that. I thought it was very, very funny and very true to that moment. But it was fascinating to me that Nate, I thought your segue was really sharp, actually, Coach, because Nate feels so fucking dismissed right now. And yeah, that's a tough,
he's got yeah, very incel qualities.
Oh yes,
100%.
And we're going to be getting into this a little bit later in the episode. I want to make sure, I'm pretty sure I mentioned, but I would like to reiterate, when they're talking in a few episodes ago about they need to get Isaac out of his funk and they need a big dog to talk to him. And Nate's like, oh, okay, I'll do it. And everybody laughs. Everybody laughs. To be fair, if I told my boss I'm interested in becoming this accountant or auditor or whatever else, and he laughed at me, I would find a new job. If I told somebody honestly, this is what I hope for my career, and they dismissed that, I would leave that place of employment. I do think that there is a big deal to be had that Nate said, I want to be this. Ted laughed at him and then went and got Roy to do this. And now Nate is like, oh, okay, well, I'm on the same level as Roy. Even though it's a mistake, I can hit on his girlfriend because he and I are about the same. And Roy's like, yeah, no, you're not a threat. Jamie is a threat. Jamie might actually get Keely. You, Nate, nobody's taking you seriously.
Like, it might be a last man on earth type situation. I hate to break it to you, Nate. Like, I mean, it is how far Keely has to work her way down the roster before you're getting the call from the bullpen or
Will Forte would be way above Nate at this point. Also, Jason Sudeikis does make an appearance on Last Man on Earth, just in case anybody wanted to catch up.
Roy says, wait, so sometimes the fucking Diamond Dogs is just about chatting and shit, and no one has to fucking solve anything and nothing ever changes. He says, sometimes, yeah. And Roy says, that's cool. And turns away, and then they do the fanboy thing. Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. A lot of fist pumping from Ted, and then we're out of the scene. I want to point out.
Okay, go ahead.
We're not gonna end.
Don't leave yet.
This scene. We're not gonna end this scene. I'm just saying that's where the scene ends, because then we get an overhead shot of the next match. But Ted fucked up big time.
Tell me how and why.
Big time. This happens in my family. So I grew up in a family where conflict was everything. Like, I grew up in a family where it was people always ribbing and constant conflict all the time. So I am not conflict averse because it's the literal water that I swam in my entire childhood and formative years. Now I've built with my family, and with Juliana, say myself, but Juliana and I together have built she is lovely and smart and kind and principled. And so we have built a family that is based on discussion and, conversation and all sorts of very, very generative, affirming practices. But conflict still does happen. And I notice when it happens, her instinct, because she grew up in a family that's conflict averse, and this is not a knock on her, is to be like, you know what, let's take a deep breath and we'll hit that back. And for me, that's usually when some of the good stuff happens.
Yep.
is yeah. when now let's dig in. Okay, like somebody should have explained to Nate what was going on. Like instead of him now Nate goes away with bad feelings. It's like the wrong time to cut it off. And I'm not saying like, oh, it's great, you gotta have conflict. I'm not some barbarian, but I think like even if you're sometimes it is. Maybe we'll take a little break, we'll come back and we'll discuss why. But you don't just end it and then put a period on it. It could be a comma in the sentence. But it shouldn't be a period when you finally hit pay dirt, when there's actual gold at the end of the vein, you know, that you're mining, that's when you have to get to the gold. You don't just say, that's it.
I'd push back a little on that. I'd push back a little. It's not disagreeing as such, like whole heart, but I'd push back a little, which is, I think sometimes as a leader, as a coach, there could be conversations you don't want to get into. And in a way, if for Nate, like specifically here with Nate, what would we be communicating to Nate that would be helpful in this moment? Right? Like, so if, sure, you could give him the truth of, Nate, ain't nobody worried about you taking a girl. That's like, ain't nobody worried about you taking a girl. Like, that's just a thing. Let it go because it doesn't exist. But what's that actually do for Nate and or Richmond in this moment? Like, they're about to head out to the pitch. Like, let's say we hit, like, I get what you're saying that, and I'm with you sometimes for better or for worse. Also, I think it's interesting that we both are perfectly comfortable with conflict and have both married women who have the good sense to say, let's take a breath. Probably a good thing. There's so nobody dies. But I think sometimes it's like, you know what? For me, sometimes now I'm getting more and more to what end on almost everything I do. Could do that, but to what end?
But you could put it in Nate's court. I'm not saying you couldn't take a break and have this conversation later. Yeah. I'm not saying you have to have it when all the tempers are high. Everything is a
right.
You got to figure it out. But at some point, someone could say, Nate, sure, okay, I can see that you're frustrated. Yeah, you didn't get headbutted. Explain why. Well, because you made me feel like I didn't matter and like I wasn't worthy of it. Well, Keely's attracted to cocky pricks and you're not a cocky or whatever. You know what I mean? Like you could make it so, or she's attracted to footballers. You're not a football, you're a football coach. She's not attracted to Ted. She's not attracted to Beard. Should they be mad too? Like what I'm saying is like there's lots of ways to articulate it in ways that are clarifying. And so, but instead, in lieu of that, when you just say, oh, all right, let's ever get back to work. Now he's got to go stew and bad things happen. So even if it's a conversation where you say, okay, Roy, I'd like you to talk to Nate and get to the bottom of this because I noticed he wasn't cool with that. And you know, like whatever the tactic is, but it should be addressed. It shouldn't just be left wide open because people, incels like Nate, can draw the wrong conclusions and bad shit happens is all I'm saying. So, but, and you can take this loss and turn it into a win if you're a good enough leader. So, you know, I just think that's like one of the things I didn't get to say while we were talking about incels is there's a whole Jordan Peterson thing. They have gurus that are telling them the wrong things. And so that's part of why, you know, they're looking for answers and they're getting them in the wrong places. And I promise you, 100%. If I put Coach Bishop in a room with 200 incels, maybe he doesn't change 200, but I promise you they're going to think differently when they leave that room. So it's just, you know, it's again, not all of them, whatever, but, and in this case, I just didn't like that it was Nate is left to his own devices. He was clearly frustrated. You know, it's insulting for him. When you have like a real fragile ego like that and you're already, you know, self-loathing, weird stuff can happen. You just address it. Go ahead, boss.
Well, I actually agree with almost everything you say, which doesn't happen that much. The only two things that I will needle at is number one, you said you're not always looking for conflict. You're not a barbarian or something. I hate framing conflict or confrontation or even fights, like not violent in bad faith, mean, dirty fighting, but like having a conversation where voices are raised and tempers are up with somebody that you love and it's safe, totally fine. One of my favorite things. I actually like, I feel comfortable in it. I'm fine in it. I don't think it's bad in any way, shape, or form. I think if that is not comfortable for you, that shouldn't be the communication style that somebody brings to you.
Right. Right.
But if both be, it, absolutely fucking fine. I could scream at my siblings and we're fine. We're fine at the end of it. Like, it's not a big deal. The only other thing, I know that we point to Jordan Peterson or fucking Andrew Tate or whoever else, all these horrible people that are telling people horrible things. And it sucks that they are, but you exist in a world where Andrew Tate is telling you that you should be an asshole and that's how you get ahead and that's how you get a woman and that's how you become successful, and you are not listening to them. So even though I understand having a certain amount of sympathy for incels who are listening to those people, they are making choices.
I'm just saying, let's not generalize. Yeah, great. Yes. I just think like that whole incel community, I bet 30% of them are autistic. And they're undiagnosed autistic kids. Like, I'm just saying, like, look, as a white man who tries to be constantly bettering themselves, many, 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 almost all of the life moments, the milestones I was theoretically promised by the universe, like, you know, in growing up, that whatever, I got none of them. None. Like, none of the things that were, like, theoretical markers of male patriarchal success, I got almost none of them. You know, like, I just never, part of it is me choosing not to go that path, but part of it is just like the world changed while those things were still in play, and it's not, whatever. Now, I can be mad about it. I can say, you know, I was thinking about like the concept of like a promotion where people pop like bottles of wine and like, hey, you got the corner office, or, oh, this guy made partner, things like that. That in our formative years were like, oh, this is what you're supposed to aspire to. And I never did. So I never got them. But I'm like, it's just, I can see how the earth shifts under people. And there's, if you're not sure how to handle it, it can be confounding. And boss, you're 100% right that, you know, some of these people should not be listening. Almost, you know, it's hard. But when you're lonely and you're looking for any answers, there are people who are experts at, just like we said, Rupert knew who to talk to. There are people, you know, and to create a Fisher at Richmond, there are people who are tailor-made for lonely men who are looking to point the finger at someone. And again, a certain percentage of them are malleable enough to buy into it. So yes, it's a complicated issue.
Before we move on from this, and I will make this quick, I promise. One of the things my boss used to say that I know I've mentioned, so I don't want this to sound bitchy. I mean this in the most pure sense of the way. Why did you tell us that? What is it about your understanding that there are some incels who are struggling with things that you wanted to make sure that we knew? Because I feel like what I've said is, I know that they're lonely. I know that it's difficult. I know that there are bad role models. I understand sort of the motivation and the context in which somebody might become an incel. And what I am more judging is, outside of those, if that water that they're swimming in, they are an incel. So it feels like you want to continually remind us. Well,
that's
an incel,
that's what you're calling them. You're saying me?
No. I'm genuinely wondering, why is it that you want to say, like, you have sympathy for their loneliness? What are you trying to convey to me when you say that?
No. It's not that it's sympathy for the lonely. I have sympathy for, yes, that's already asked and answered, the loneliness part of it. I'm saying the way out is, I have sympathy for them not knowing the right road and understanding that, or misunderstanding that, the earth has shifted under their feet while they weren't paying attention. I've seen evidence of that in my own life. I think, it's when, again, there are people that are really good at giving a false, like the false prophets. Like, it's like, okay, here's the way out, but that's not really the way out. But you've been looking for the way out, so it's natural to go down that road. I just think that I'm hesitant to generalize, but it doesn't.
What do you mean by that? When you say you're hesitant to generalize?
I don't know enough about the incel term. I don't know if these if incels call themselves incels or if that's something we've labeled them. Once upon a time, it was like guys who were on 4chan. You know what I mean? It was like these.
Yeah.
They were just like these crazies that were outside the whatever. And now it's just grown into this thing. So I don't know enough about it. I don't know enough about it to say, okay, I'm not going to label. I don't know which ones are sort of reachable, which ones aren't. I don't know. I honestly don't know. I'm just saying in general, I always feel sympathy for people who are confused about the world that they live in and have and are now that we said we all, you've given you said I have sympathy too, so now it's like how do now where do we go from there? And you're saying, well, you know, you've chosen you know to listen to assholes, then you have a problem with that. Yeah, it sucks. And now I'm just saying I wish we could put Coach Bishop in front of them so they could have a different person to listen to, and that would be a better situation. I just want them to have. I want everyone. It's not just them. It's not. Everyone who's feeling the earth shift under their feet. Look at anyone that has that is not able to deal with climate change is going through the same thing where they go, there's mosquitoes in LA.
Okay, so people are going, wait a second. I need to cut you off because I feel like you're re-explaining something that I understand and moving farther away from the question that I asked, which was, why do you have a problem with the generalization? What is it about the generalization that you think is a bad thing? Because what I considered was we are talking about a group of people, whether they self-identify or they have the same traits as people who are incels. And you say, I don't want to generalize. What is the bad part of generalizing? What do you think that I am saying about them when I label a group of people who identify as incels as incels?
I'm not reacting to you labeling them. I'm saying in general.
Okay.
Do I know enough about the spectrum of the incel community to say all incels are X? No, I don't. I don't think you do. I don't think any of us do. I don't think probably enough has been done understand that.
This is the disconnect between what I am saying and what you are saying. Because what you are saying is I don't know enough about incels to say X, Y, or Z about them.
Yeah.
What I am saying is if a person is a self-identified incel and they say, I deserve a woman because of X, Y, and Z, what I am saying about them is not they are bad people or they deserve to be punished or I never want to speak with them or they're irredeemable. I'm not saying any of that. I am saying what you told me was you can't get a woman because you're not a Chad or whatever else. And I am saying, well, the reality of his situation is he needs to update, he needs to change, he needs to adapt in order to change this incel thing. If he wants a woman, what he has to do is become the person that a woman wants to date. I am not making any sort of characteristic judgment or character judgment. I'm not saying good, bad, anything else. I am saying...
But you're also focusing on women, which I don't think is necessary. My understanding of it is it's not just limited to women. It's sort of a worldview. Not having the position in life, not having. So you're focusing on one part of it. And I'm saying, I just don't know enough to say, to paint everybody with the same brush. I'm always hesitant to do that.
I mean, it stands for involuntary celibate, right? So I mean, in a way, yes, I hear what you're saying that there may be a broader. That there are broader issues to be brought into it.
We just called Nate an incel.
And we said he had incel vibes. And he does.
Right.
And he
does. But I think that's how I'm saying.
But I'm saying he kind of does have some of that going on. I mean, he even said, I'm very picky, so are women, right? So he ain't been turning them back. Like ever since his dad sent the old girl away in high school. You know.
Yeah.
So I think...
We're using it as a colloquialism to say, I'm not saying like, I didn't know. I'm finding out right now that there are people who are self-affirming, card-carrying incels.
Yeah.
I guessed that was it. But I'm saying, I think we're using it to paint the larger picture of dissatisfied men of any, you know, sort of race. I'm saying in general, I don't know enough to paint everybody with the same brush. I think it's a really basic.
Go. But what I'm saying is that I'm not trying to paint anybody with a brush. What I'm saying is that, so what you said earlier about Republicans is that you were like, well, there are good Republicans and then there's Marjorie Taylor Greene. And what I'm saying is, I don't think every Republican is as bad as Marjorie Taylor Greene. I'm saying every Republican is a Republican because they are a Republican. Like, there's no generalization for me when I say that. I am not drawing a conclusion outside of the fact that you usually vote for the Republican candidate. I am not talking about your beliefs or who you are as a person or your morals. I am saying that this is a thing that I know about you. You are a Republican. That's it.
Right. And that's a party that people register and vote for and they choose it. And I was saying the way we were talking about incels was colloquially as like a segment of the population. I wasn't saying only the people who self-identify or make a declarative statement that it's not like registering for a political party. I'm just saying, I don't even know what we're talking about because I can't track it. I think you're reacting to me saying that you're saying something wrong, and I'm not. I'm just saying, in general, for me, I try to always look for the humanity in people, and I always think like, I try to allow people to be redeemable in my mind until they aren't. And sure. So that's it. I don't think you disagree with me about that. You're nodding. And so I'm saying that's kind of how I'm approaching this, in a broad fashion.
I was really curious, as you both know, for me, it's always the best questions that make me go, ooh. And so that was my reaction when Boss said, what made you need to communicate to me? Right. And I was like, oh, that's interesting, because then that becomes about like, what you felt wasn't being served. It sounds like in part you thought people who don't deserve whatever this analysis is or whatever might be negative about what we're saying could be sort of herded into being described in a given way. But I also wonder if our desire to be understanding, and maybe Ted does some of this too, actually, now that I say it or think it, our desire to be understanding leads us to accept the unacceptable. Right? So Nate's out of hand. Like, Nate is out of motherfucking hand. Like, even if it was just, word is that that Richmond considered parking the bus, but then the head coach decided to be aggressive. Like, none of that should be in the fucking paper. Like, he's out of line. Right. And so sometimes, and I'm not saying this specifically what you're doing, Cole, but what the question like started to pick at for me is, okay, so let's say Nate does feel a way, and that's why he told the newspaper how we decided on our strategy. That doesn't make going to the paper about it okay or acceptable or any of those things. And I think sometimes, and I think this plays into the curious, not judgmental conversation, I think it's where there's sort of this blur and a place, a version of it, I think speaks to the same thing you'll tell me, is when people talk about being tolerant. And then there's this attempt to flip it around and make it then that somehow I should be tolerant of misogyny or tolerant of white supremacy. And I'm like, absolutely the fuck not. Like, I'm not, this isn't like a, like we're not, this is a theoretical game here. Like, I'm trying to create justice in the world and this ain't it. So I think sometimes in our attempts to be, quote, understanding, the behavior, because the behavior cannot be redeemed. The person can be redeemed. And I think that gets very gray sometimes as to which one we're actually speaking to.
I think it's incredibly well said, Coach. I think you make a great point. The behavior itself is something that's tough. That can be tough. Maybe it just means I need to go read up a little bit more on what defines an incel. I have so much on my plate.
I get that.
The last thing I want to do is learn more about incels. I'm like, oh.
No, God. I certainly don't think you need you need to do that. I think they're where they are. But the other piece that I thought that did jump out here, and I didn't want to lose it, was the piece about Nate not being considered a big dog and sort of the fallout from that and how much of that Ted owns, needs to manage, needs to deal with. And
we're definitely going to get to that. For sure.
I think there's a lot to get into there. And I do think there's some ways in which Ted could have handled Nate more effectively. But I will throw in that at a certain point in our life, we have to start getting real about who we are and who we are not. And it's an ongoing, it's a lifelong process. It's all sorts of things, but I don't see how I'm ever going to be a pacifist. This is not who the fuck I am. This is not. Like, maybe one day I will be. Maybe I'll change. But as of this moment in my life, I just don't see. And so sort of to say to people, well, I'm a pacifist, you know. They're like, are you sure? Because last we heard, you busted out somebody's fucking window for bothering your wife. So you want to amend that statement? You know what I mean? Like, so I think part of this is also Nate does not know who the fuck Nate is. So he wants to try. He's kind of behaving like like somebody in high school or even college who's like, oh yeah, where I came from, I was Jimmy, but now call me James. And I used to be a nerd, but now I wear a leather jacket, so I'm a cool kid. Like, he's trying on, oh, I'll be a big dog. It's like, actually, no, you won't. You'll never be that dude. That's not who you are. In some ways, Ted's not that dude. And Ted don't pretend to be that dude. Ted comes into the locker room for the first time. That is not how I would have introduced myself to a team. We talked about it at the time. I would have come in. I've been like, all right, you know, eyes on me. You know, it would have been respectful. It wouldn't have been a Bobby Knight speech, but it certainly wouldn't have been keep doing whatever the fuck you're doing while I'm talking. Like, that's a habit we need to break now. Like, don't be doing what the fuck you're doing. I'm talking is more what we meant to say. So, but that's not Ted. You know what I mean? So I think part of Nate's work is finding out who the fuck Nate is so that he doesn't say shit like, I'm the big dog who should go talk to Roy about something. When that's what? In what universe, bro?
In the strategic universe. He is the brains of the operation.
But then that translates. But he should get that then, right? Like, in a funny way, Roy overemphasizes I have this box within which I exist, which is why, like, even saying he has a feeling in this scene is like, you know, him trying it, him like just to take it a little toe outside that box. And meanwhile, Nate is like, oh, I am all things in the universe. And it's like, but you're really not though. And you have to, it's imperative if you're going to be an effective coach to know yourself and keep knowing yourself better. Because when whoever you're coaching senses that you're full of shit, it's game over. And so if Nate goes out there and pretends
boss,
to be...
Boss is nodding.
Roy is actually a big dog. Jamie is actually a big dog. If you go play big dog in front of them, they're going to be like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah. It's actually very similar to season one, the last episode, when Ted comes in after their loss. He doesn't come in and say like, oh, well, we're going to get him next. He's like, oh, this is fucking sad. This is really fucking sad.
That's right.
Like, this is really hard.
That's right.
It's good that we're all together in it, but he was honest about what was happening. And that level of authenticity, not just honesty, authenticity is what is needed.
Yes, absolutely. We're going to leave it there today. Lots of things to think about. Coach, where do people find you if they want to find you?
I'm going to shout out Unstuck as Fuck, the stage show, Key West. You can stream that. I will make sure. Oh, the link is actually in the show notes. So encourage you to check it out. I actually found myself revisiting for some stuff I had to work on. I was like, you know what? More people should see this. I think this could help some people. So I'm going to promote it right now.
I agree. I think everyone who listens to this should definitely watch that. Boss, what about you?
You can find me at Blue Sky. It's Emily Chambers, also on Threads at emily.chambers.31. And hopefully sometime, God help me, writing at The Antagonist, which is antagonistblog.com.
Thank you, Boss. Okay, this has been part 4 of our discussion about inverting the pyramids of success. The pyramid, singular. I put an S on there for some reason. Inverting the pyramid of success. Thank you for joining us. This has been a It's been a real doozy of a conversation. I'm gonna go splash some cold water on my face and do some real hard thinking about why I partnered with these two. please support your local libraries and the written word. And until next time, we are
Richmond till we headbutt neat.
Bingo.
We'll see if that happens next time. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you.
The TEDcast is a joint venture between Pajiba and The Antagonist. Visit us at pajiba.com and antagonistblog.com.